Hi, and welcome back to the Business of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Tara Humphrey. I run an award-winning healthcare consultancy specialising in supporting primary care networks. I'm a facilitator. I am a mum of three. I have an MBA, and I would class myself as a bit of an adventurer. And I absolutely love all things business, all things leadership, all things management. So I created this podcast for clinical and non-clinical colleagues working in the field of health and care, and for those of you looking to develop your leadership skills. Every week we release an episode which focuses on the hard and soft skills required to lead in this increasingly complex environment as we move to delivering more integrated care. So let's jump into this week's episode. Hey, and welcome back to the Business of Healthcare podcast. I hope you guys are doing well. In this week's episode, I am joined by two fantastic GP receptionists who give us a greater insight into the role of the GP receptionist. We have Chloe from the Berkshire and Reading area, and we have Zara, whose practice is based in Southeast London. They have two very different practices in how they're organised, but they share the same challenges and also share the love of the role. Now, the reason why I wanted them on the podcast is because I often find the GP receptionist is left out of conversations when I'm working with general practices and primary care networks, and I really wanted their voice here on the podcast. And also, a while ago, I posted on social media that if we only share the negative side of primary care and working in general practice, we can't be surprised when we find it hard to recruit. And understandably, that post received a mixed response. And whilst I would never and could never deny that general practice is a challenging place to be, there are so many people out there who love their job and want to make a difference and feel like they can make a difference, and they have really supportive teams around them. And I really want to showcase that. It is challenging, but it's not all bad. And Chloe and Zara are a fantastic, fantastic example of that and champion the GP receptionist role. So without further ado, let's jump in. Hey, Chloe, thank you so much for joining me today on the Business of Healthcare podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Been great recently. How are you?
I'm good. I was just saying I'm busy in a good way. I am really pleased. So this meeting came about because in my normal day-to-day job working with primary care networks, we often talk about the role of the GP receptionist, but they're very rarely at our meetings. We kind of say, oh, the receptionist will do that, or the receptionist. We talk about the role all of the time, but they're quite hidden. And I was a little bit like, Tara, you know better. You know better. Stop leaving this hugely important stakeholder out of the conversations. We talk about the role and we all say there's never a dispute about how important the role is, and that, you know, helping patients navigate around the system, navigate around your practice. It's like, we need to speak to receptionists. So I was like, okay, let me put a call out to see if anybody is brave enough to come onto the podcast. And thank you so much for stepping forward. So would you be able to share who you are, what you do, and where you work?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me, truly. So my name's Chloe. I am a GP receptionist in a surgery called Brookside Group Practice. And we're based in Early, which is in Reading in Berkshire. And we are an amazing practice because we have 30,000 patients and we're on four different sites around the area. And we have anything, I'm going to try and get this right, but I think we've got between 20 and 30 GPs, 6 to 8 physician associates. We've got 4 to 6 nurses, 4 healthcare associates. We've got a brilliant team called the Health and Wellbeing Team. And we've got loads of different services within primary care. So when I first came here, I didn't realise how much could be done on one site and how much support there is for patients. So that's where I work, and I do a mixture of admin, call centre. I'm at the desk, the same as you'd imagine a normal receptionist to be at the desk. And I do what's called a patient health team liaison role. So I'm based with 2 GPs, a physician associate and a health and wellbeing member in a group of 4. and I help the clinicians with any admin support or calling patients, checking in with patients, those that are vulnerable, maybe people that come to the surgery quite a lot and need that extra support. I also have a role where I look after those patients, which is very rewarding and a brilliant role that was originated last year in June by one of the partners. So there's 7 of us in our role that cover those groups of partners and clinicians and physician associates. So yeah, that's basically what I do.
So are you a receptionist? Are they the same role? Do you call yourself receptionist?
I guess it's quite confusing. So I am a receptionist first and foremost. So that takes up probably at least 2/3 of my time. And they rotate me accordingly to the different sites. And we call ourselves receptionists even when we're in the call centre, because it's dealing with queries that you'd have at the desk, but they're just phoning in instead. And then they also asked if I could do this liaison role. So most receptionists in our company will just be at the desk or in the call centre doing a bit of admin. I've been asked to do this extra role on top of that. So it's 2/3 receptionist and like 1/3 liaison, I'd say.
And what did you do before coming into general practice?
I have a very, very different background. So I actually used to be an actress. So I went to drama school for 4 years, similar place to where like Judi Dench went to, that kind of level of training, although not as fancy as Judi Dench. So I graduated in 2018. I went in 2014. And then I performed for 2 years just before COVID hit. And it was actually a really good time for COVID to come, because I decided I wanted to do something different. So I had an online business in the health and wellness space. I stayed a waitress. And then I decided I wanted to do something a bit more purposeful. And I could see the impact of a big team working together. And I'd always looked towards like the council or the NHS. And I was thrilled when I saw there was a vacancy quite close to where I live, working in the NHS. So that's how I found the role.
And what have you found most surprising? And how long have you been in your current role?
So I started here in January 2023, so literally just over a year now. I say the most surprising thing was, now I didn't expect how friendly everyone would be, which is quite a funny thing to say, but because we know how much pressure the NHS is under, I kind of expected people to be working behind closed doors, you know, like struggling to see as many patients as possible, and there wouldn't be as much communication socially, if that makes sense. And I was so surprised in such a beautiful way at how kind and generous and thoughtful all of the staff are. I get on just as well with my head practice manager as I do with my colleagues in reception. Everyone is so supportive and the communication is unbelievable. I can go into that in a bit maybe, but I didn't quite expect. I kind of thought there'd be like a hierarchy and that you'd feel it in the space. I think GPs are incredible and I kind of like really bow down to them, but they don't treat you any differently. And we're always asking each other, how are you doing? And they notice when they can see that you're stressed or you're not your usual self. And there's always open discussion and support there. I can't count on 2 hands how many amazing conversations I've had where I've needed an extra hand or I've needed to brainstorm and people have just been so supportive. I'd say that's actually probably the most surprising thing, because we know that we support the patients. I don't know why I didn't expect it, but it was a lovely surprise when it was happening between our team as well.
It's so lovely to hear, because I think that when you're not in it and you just see the press and you see the stories coming out in the news, it's very different. So they're not saying, come along to your friendly, supportive GP practice. They're not saying that. So I think it's really lovely for people to hear. It's not all bad. It's tough, but it's not all bad.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Of course, it comes with some stress and there is massive demand. Like, I wish we could add more hours in the day because we would love to see everyone that we could. But the environment that I'm in is so supportive. And I think everyone is so aware of how hard it could be that there's such an energy to, especially in our company, to do the best we can and be proud of ourselves and just keep that energy up where we know we're trying our best and we want the patients to feel like that and we want them to feel looked after. And because there's just not enough to go around at the minute, you're right, there's definitely this kind of anger towards the NHS. So it is such a nice surprise to feel a lot of joy Like, I never dread coming to work. I just worry that I could do more. Like, I'm like, oh, what could I do more for this patient that has a query and I can't give them exactly what they want, but what else can I do instead? All of us work like that.
Do you ever feel, when you mention the word anger, I suppose from a public perspective, but for your patient population, do you see and feel the frustration when patients want an appointment and they may not be able to get an appointment as quickly as they would like?
Yes, definitely. It happens every day, understandably. I'd say I have at least 5 to 10 conversations a day where someone is obviously distressed and upset and worried and kind of sharp intake of breath when you tell them when the next routine appointment is. It is really hard, and we do have that conversation, and we're very lucky actually, and we remind each other all the time that it's only once in a blue moon that someone is very, very upset or very, very angry with us. A lot of patients are very understanding and very grateful, and they know that it's not anyone's fault. It's just how the system is at the moment. So we do feel the frustration and it does affect us, but we try our best to not let it drag down how well we're trying to run the show, I suppose.
I think it would be really helpful. Like, how does it make you feel? Because I think there is a perception. I think, and I was trying to find the survey, but GP receptionists, unfortunately, in some surveys, score really highly on like the worst jobs in Britain, or like GP receptionists are really rude. How does it make you feel when you can't give somebody what they want when they want it?
Oh, it's awful. It's the worst feeling, especially when you can tell what someone's been through. Like, you have a quick look at the notes and you see what's going on for them. It's quite rare that you'll have patients that come across demanding when there's no reason to be demanding, if that makes sense. And we're not here to judge who should have an appointment and who shouldn't. We always prioritize people on their symptoms. And then when we're full, we're full. Especially for me, like, I came to this job a huge people pleaser, and I just want to give everyone everything they want because I just love being able to do that. So it was a really good job for me to have, and I wanted the job to test my own ability to handle my emotions when I couldn't give someone what they wanted. I do wish sometimes, and I know it's not possible, but I do wish we were like a walk-in clinic, because I would love to just say yes and book everyone in. And I find that is genuinely the hardest part of my role, is telling people, no, you can't have an appointment when you want it. I remind myself, like, these are the resources I've got. I will triage people and give them the best care that we can. And we always communicate. We always talk to each other. So we have a team leader on site all the time. Our manager's always on site. And we have a supervising GP at every single site as well. So they always say, if you're really stuck and you're really worried about a patient, of course, come and find us. And we do have an emergency clinic every day as well. So there are options. I know that there's a lot of stereotyping with receptionists, and I think we can come across that way. I think it's because there's a lot of sensory overload in our jobs. We've got a list of things to do, as well as being at the desk, as well as managing our own tasks. And when you have a lot of clinicians and patients speaking to you all day long, you do end up with a bit of a cold front sometimes, just to manage. You might have a dead face on whilst you're like trying to concentrate. But we try our best to be as warm as possible and to not let the previous patient affect how we then treat the next patient if that had been a particularly stressful or upsetting situation. But yeah, it's hard. It is a bit hard.
So Zara, thank you so much for joining us. Would you be able to share who you are, what you do, and where you work?
So my name is Zara Sultan. I work in Sternholding Surgery, which is based in Peckham in London. I'm the reception supervisor. I've been working there for almost a year now. In the past, I've worked in both NHS and private GPs.
Could you describe your practice?
It's quite a small practice. So we have just under 6,000 patients registered, which is considered a very small practice. But we have a range of different clinicians. So our admin team is about, I think, 6 to 8 people in total. We've got 3 permanent GPs, and then we've got clinicians of all sorts. So we've got a mental health practitioner, a health and well-being coach, dietitian, pharmacist as well, a whole pharmacy team. Actually, our surgery, one of them just qualified to prescribe as well. So we've got quite a large team with a range of specialties.
Have you got enough GPs?
I'd say since recently, because one of our GPs is off on maternity leave, I'd definitely say it would be great if we had more. We do have locums quite a lot at our GP, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Some patients don't really mind. It's usually the elderly patients that prefer to see the same GP each time. It would be great to have more regular GPs.
And can you describe what the makeup of broadly of your population?
I'd say over recent years in South London, it's changed quite a lot with the gentrification and Peckham recently being voted the coolest neighbourhood in the world or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. By Time Out magazine, it's the 11th coolest neighbourhood. So there's people from all types of backgrounds. I'd say the majority of the people in the area are elderly, African Caribbean population. But recently, a lot of young people have moved into the neighbourhood. So young families, students as well, changed quite a bit over the last few years.
I was born in Camberwell. So also like my stomping ground, I was there the other day. I didn't know it rated so highly as like one of the coolest places to be. So how would you sum up your role? What does a reception supervisor do? Give us like a broad overview of a typical week.
I'd say I'm sort of the middleman now between the admin team and the clinicians, working closely with the practice manager as well. So before I started, they didn't actually have a reception supervisor. So then my manager was sort of the middleman. So I've taken a lot of pressure off of her. I'd say every day is different. It's always interesting. There's always something happening, something new happening. What I love about my job is that there's so many new things that I learn every day. I work with so many different types of clinicians. It's never boring for me. It's not just reception.
What are some of the challenging aspects of your role?
Giving the patients exactly what they want with all the changes that are happening, because they expect it to be how it's always been, especially before the pandemic. And because things are so different now, it's just making them happy and keeping them satisfied with their healthcare. That can definitely be very challenging. So just explaining all the changes to them and finding a solution that works for everyone, it can definitely be quite challenging.
How did it used to be compared to how it is now?
This might not be the same in every GP practice, but I think the majority of the changes that make patients unhappy now is the amount of face-to-face appointments that are available to them. So they don't see clinicians as much as they did before. The majority of the appointments are virtual, over the phone or via video consultation. There's a lot of e-consults before they get to speak to a clinician. That can be very challenging for an elderly community or people that are just not used to doing things online. I'd say that's the biggest change.
Chloe, how is it for you? Do you guys offer a lot of online appointments?
No, we don't do online at all. So if they would like an urgent appointment, they have to request through our online Anima system. But then the appointments are preferably face-to-face. And then we only make them telephone calls if, say, the patient is housebound or they have symptoms where it's not safe for them to come into the surgery. But no, we don't do virtual consultations. And I say like 80% of our appointments are face-to-face. So we're very different. Yeah, very, very different.
Yeah, complete opposite.
Yeah, but the pressure's the same. Like you say, they don't want to do the online form, which is understandable if you've come from a time where you could just ring up and book an appointment. But it helps us a lot. We think we do agree that it's the best way to triage as many as possible at the same time to help with the workload of the amount of urgent care requests we get. We don't have enough people to pick up the phones otherwise. But yeah, very different, super different.
I must admit, when it first got introduced, I remember thinking, oh, I can't be bothered. It's easier to call. If you can use it, it saves so much time because you might be on the phone for ages and sometimes the call drops. And someone said to me, you know, like the better information you put in, the better outcome you receive. So, you know, if you try and cheat it and put in the minimum, but actually if you do spend an extra couple more minutes being very clear with what it is that you want, what you're expecting, your symptoms. So it's kind of like, yeah, better information in, better outcome. So one of the things I think is really interesting is that I think general practices, you provide a patient service, but you run on tech. The amount of tech and applications you guys use, you're like tech companies. Zara, if you share some of the systems that you use, let's count these up.
There's so many different ones. So the main one, GPs usually use one of two. It's either EMIS or System One. So we use EMIS. So that's the main system that we use. There's also a referral system called ERS. There is a messaging system which you can also use for virtual appointments called AccuRx.
Your virtual consultations, what do you use?
AccuRx. We mostly use it to send messages to patients, but you can also send documents to them, questionnaires, but that can be used for a video consultation as well. Then there is a registration service called HealthTech One, which we recently started using that since about November. People love that. It only takes a day or two to be registered with that. Those are the main ones that I use, but then clinicians will use other ones as well. This one's not used anymore, I think, but they would use it to record on, and then secretaries would write the letters based on the recordings. There's DocMan, so the documents would come into it from hospitals, clinics. Then we would code these and label them into the patient's health records. We've recently stopped using that in the last few months.
You've got your cloud-based telephony, or do you have that?
Yes, we do, called Surgery Connect.
This podcast should be sponsored, shouldn't it?
Sure, there's so many that I'm forgetting right now. But yeah, Surgery Connect, that's pretty great as well. So we can track telephone calls on there. All of the recordings will go in there.
Chloe, what do you guys use?
Pretty much exactly the same. So our consultation software, so they fill in the online symptom questionnaire and then we triage it. That's called Anima. And we started that one in July, but it was eConsult before through EMIS. So we use EMIS as well. Outlook, DocMan, Surgery Connect. The coding team definitely use software to code. But again, I don't know which one that one is. And we use AccuRx, and I use it every day. Whenever I find a computer where it hasn't been downloaded, I'm like, I need it.
That is the best ad ever.
Yeah, whenever I ring a patient and I can't get through, I'll send them an email to say, we tried to call you today, this is why, for that extra comfort, so that they're not panicking that they've had a call from the GP. If the whole system goes down, we're a bit stuffed.
Yeah. How do you manage the day-to-day stress of the job?
I work with an amazing team and we all support each other. So if there's anyone, you know, that's a bit overwhelmed with their work, we all chip in. That's definitely the main thing that I use to manage the stress levels. You know, there's management if they need to get involved, other clinicians. There's a great support system about the surgery that I work at.
So I will often talk to my partner on the way home. I tend to relax a lot of my evenings. I used to actually go out a lot after work, but I find that that does kind of have to wait for the weekend, because if I don't go to bed early and I don't have a few hours of even being away from my phone, like I would just let myself be. And I find that is the best way for my brain to kind of swallow all the information from the day. So yeah, and I try and eat very well and things like that, but I don't really have a set ritual. But I do find that communicating with friends and family and loved ones, I love journaling as well. I'm a big fan of journaling and I encourage everyone I know to just get it down and just write it down. I find that I'm quite a visual person. So if I'm not at work, I don't worry about work as much. I've learned that about myself recently, that I'm kind of an out of sight, out of mind person, but most of us are not like that. And I will wake up in the night sometimes going, did I do that thing for that patient that I said I would do?
And what things are in place at work to support your well-being?
So many opportunities at work, which is fantastic. So my manager, she is brilliant. I've had so many conversations with her. I know I can go to her at any time. She often catches us and, you know, asks us how we're doing, if there's anything that we need. We have weekly meetings as a reception team, and we often have a clinician that will come in and discuss with us things that could be improved and things we're doing really well on. There's often a lot of emails that go around supporting us. So we had a meeting last week that was a bit sensitive, and the clinician that delivered it then sent us a really lovely email afterwards to say, like, please don't be disheartened. Everyone's doing so well. We couldn't run without you. And it just, that helps a lot. We have thank you emails that HR send out once a week where they've collated all of the comments that patients have given us. We have activities that we run. So when the weather's warmer, we run like netball teams, dragon boat racing, done arts and crafts. We have a few girls in my team that can do arts and crafts and they sell their own products. So they put on these like Saturday mornings for a couple of hours where you can make things. There's loads of support. It's just unbelievable. Again, I've never really experienced that. So we're so lucky. Everyone should come work for Brookside.
I don't know. I'm like, I want to come and work for you. So given that your team is quite a large team, there's a new start, especially if they're clinical. How do you find out about who they are, what they do? How do you guys communicate that internally?
So I love the way we do it, actually. I think it's brilliant. So again, HR will take a really nice photo of them, which we always get pleasantly surprised by. We always receive these lovely images of a new staff member. They will describe who that person is, what their roles are, and how many hours a week that they're working and where they'll be based, which building they'll be based in. And that's really helpful because we recognise someone's face. And then, like, if I see them around, I can say hello. And it's not just some kind of like random person walking around where you might not be able to tell if they're like a patient or not. But it's a very helpful way of us getting to know everyone in the company. And again, because I'm quite visual, that is for me like the easiest way to be told this person's starting. And sometimes scheduling would have already put the clinician in the diary. So you're going to book an appointment and you see a clinician's name that you've never seen before. And although we are a big practice, it's not very common that people do come in. So you are kind of like, oh, that's a name I'm going to remember because I've not met them yet and they're in the diary. I'm sure I'll see them at some point. And so then when you get this email, you're kind of confirmed and it's in your mind and you feel like you've met this person, although you haven't yet. And it just makes it smoother and easier to get to know them.
Is there anything else that you think that your practice does really well that you think our audience would benefit from knowing?
I'm so biased, but we do so many things that I'm really proud of in the company and in the practice. It's the attitude. I think everyone just works so hard to do what's right by the patient. And even though as a patient, if you don't know everything that goes into patient care, it might not be so obvious. We're very good at monitoring patients. Like, we do lots of check-ins to look at patients' notes or to make sure that we have followed correct procedure. We're very good at notifying patients on time if they're missing their annual reviews or they need blood tests, or when hospital letters come in, we're very good at actioning them quite quickly. It does help to have such a big practice because there are so many people that are looking after so much of one patient's care. I just wish patients could be a fly on the wall because I think it would comfort them that when they are at home worried about not getting an appointment, there are all these conversations happening between us to try and get them the best care. Like, we might see a request that they've sent through and I might not know what to do. So I'll ask my manager and they might ask your GP. And we do make sure that we do everything we can so that we're not seeing those that need to be seen now. We're not delaying them being seen. And that if we offer a routine, it's because thankfully that patient is well enough to wait for the routine. I think that's the most important thing sometimes as well.
One of the things you said, I wish the patients could be in a fly on the wall, but they can through the mode of social media, that you guys can actually share. You can share an MDT meeting or a conversation, obviously keeping, you know, like patient confidentiality, but yeah, you could share. I would watch.
That would be great. I would love that.
One of the things you said at the top of the interview is that you've got a lot of physicians' associates. There's been a lot of press and a lot of information coming out about physicians' associates. From what you have seen in your experience, what is the patient perception of a physician associate?
So I think their perception is that we don't have any GPs left, so we're giving them to someone who's not clinical. And that is very frustrating as a receptionist, or I can imagine as a physician associate. I don't know if they feel that, but that's how it feels as a receptionist. And I think it's because it's such a new thing, they don't quite understand yet that actually physician associates have been trained nearly as long as GPs, and actually their knowledge might be more up to kind of the most recent medical practice because they've just been trained. But I think going back to their perception, I don't think people really trust us when we put people with physician associates for appointments, but they are just as qualified to give urgent care, to give routine care, to do referrals, to monitor people's health. They can prescribe, but they just need a GP to sign off the prescriptions just to make sure. But I think there is a perception, you know, I don't want to see a PA, I want to see a GP. But there's the same level of care. They're not missing out on anything by seeing one over the other. The great thing about physician associates is they have just as much knowledge, and in fact, they can be specialized as well. So some of our physician associates are mental health specialized. We have dermatology physician associates specialized. They're just fantastic. I don't think they're any less than any other doctor or GP. And I think there needs to be more knowledge, and then people will feel comforted that they're getting the same care as if they had seen a GP that day.
What would you say to somebody interested in becoming a GP receptionist, but they are scared?
I would say that it's understandable to be scared, because what you hear in the media can dictate how you might preempt a role. It is nerve-wracking at times, it is challenging, but that is, it's just so worth it. I really enjoy the challenge because it keeps work really interesting, but it is so rewarding when you work out what the patient needs and you're able to give it, or you comfort them just with a few kind words whilst they're waiting for what they need or what they want. I love it because I love multitasking, I love coordinating, I love admin. I'm a bit weird like that. I do love admin. You'll find that receptionists are the strongest group of people that want to work together, because you need each other to do the job. You'll have friends for life, I'd say, and you'll just have the joy of being able to do something really purposeful. So if you're up for a challenge, but you want to help people, I think it's one of the best jobs. I do.
I'd definitely say, if they haven't tried it before, or haven't been exposed to it, definitely give it a go. With any job and any career, you have to at least try it to see if you like it. It's not for everyone, but for the people that do work in it, they absolutely love it. With the receptionists that I work with, they have really close relationships with the community. I don't know if it's Peckham per se, but they really value community. They go above and beyond for their patients, and they find it very, very rewarding. So similar to what Chloe said, they do check-ins, and they make sure that, especially with vulnerable patients, patients that need that extra care, they're there for them. That's what they really enjoy about their role. So if you like working with people in a close-knit team, say it's a perfect job for that.
So Zara, career progression, you came in as a reception supervisor.
Yes. Yeah.
What does progression look like for a GP receptionist? If I'm a receptionist at your practice, how do I progress?
Previous surgeries that I worked at, did start off as a receptionist and then a secretary, then administrator. That really depends on what you want to do and what you envision your career to be. So one of our receptionists just got appointed as a HCA. So she had no medical background at all. She was really interested in it. So she started doing the training and she's starting as a HCA now. It really depends on what you want to do. They really value people that want to learn, that want to progress, and they will make those opportunities. So for myself, I want to get more into the management side of things. So there's courses that they've signed me up for. It's a 6-month course that I can do to learn every aspect of management. So even the financial side of things that I haven't been exposed to yet. So yeah, I'd say they really value that, and they will push you in whichever direction you want to go in.
Well, thank you both so much. I really hope that the listeners take away from this episode, you guys love your jobs. The fact that you put yourselves forward, or I think your partners put yourself forward for this. I think that general practice gets a really bad rap, and I get it and I understand it, but it's not the whole picture. And unless you're in it, yeah, or you've had a really good experience, you don't always see it. And I think when you do have a negative experience, or you just see the negative, it's hard for that not to shape your perception. And I think that the people behind the service, whether you're a receptionist, whether you're the doctor, whether you're a nurse, people really care. Chloe, I really appreciate you saying that. I suppose it's a bit of a defense mechanism, and that actually you're trying to be present with me, but you've also got like 50 things like going around in your mind, and you're trying to assess the level of urgency. So in an ideal world, everybody'd get this beaming smile and like, oh, hi, how are you doing? But that's not always the case. And it's not that you're rude or that you don't care. Sometimes I'll walk into wherever I am, I'm walking to somewhere. And even if I'm going to get bad news, but if you get eye contact, somebody smiles, you know, like it just softens everything. It's just like, ah, oh, okay. But it is hard. It is the job. But I think we do need to give people a bit of slack. You know, like you can't be on a game every single minute of the day.
We try our best, don't we? I love interacting with people, and I want to be my smiliest self. And I try really hard to stay that way all day long. like you say, when you're juggling a million things in your head, it's easy to not realise how you're maybe looking. But we do understand where people may have walked in and had that energy. But yeah, we're trying to beat that stereotype, definitely.
Well, thank you both so, so much. I can't wait to share this. I really, really, really am excited. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you hear, I would absolutely love it if you left us an iTunes rating and 5-star review. I know many of you give us a shout out on social media, which is lovely to see you guys listening to the podcast. So please come and find us on Twitter at THC Primary Care, on Instagram and on LinkedIn. Just look for Tara Humphrey. And if you're not subscribed to our newsletter, please do. You get to hear more insights, more confessions, some tips and tools and a roundup of our activity over the week. So click on join the newsletter in the show notes and I will see you in the next episode.